We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to Special Edition, a weekly look at the issues in the news and the personalities shaping the stories. Special Edition is a production of Intercom Communications.
Welcome to Special Edition. I'm Paula Degnan. Today, so many things that are happening throughout our area. We're not going to waste a moment, but get right into them and tell you what's coming up. First of all, almost back to school time. We'll have some tips for you and the kids. Also, there's still more to come at the Pocono Raceway, including an air show. Don't go away. Details on that. And you may have heard of him. He is Junior Fire Chief Brian. He's trying to raise money for a Jaws of Life for his fire company in Plymouth. Brian's making an appearance along with his group at the Plymouth Kielbasa Festival this weekend. And Brian, along with his mom, Linda Urin, stopped by and gave us the details as well as how you can help him reach his goal.
Linda, you have an awesome project that your son has decided he's taking on, and now you've become part of. Oh. Can you give us a little bit of the detail?
Brian is trying to raise money for his fire company in Plymouth, Elm Hill Hose Company Number 3. He's just trying to raise money because he wants to get a Jaws of Life for his engine.
Why?
Well, because we don't have one on our engine. He noticed, you know, a couple other stations that he's went to, they have Jaws of Life on their engine. So we came back to our fire company and he asked his chief, you know, I want to see ours. Where's ours? And they said, well, buddy, we don't have one. We can't afford that. So he said, well, let's just go sell some lemonade and let's go buy it. And not thinking that it's probably way over his head, nothing stops the kid. So in about a week, he's at $2,000. So a little over $2,000 he's earned, like raised, I should say.
Wow. Now, so, how? Wait a minute. He's what?
Brian's 10.
10?
He's 10 years old.
10! And he's taken this on?
Yeah, and Brian has autism, so there's nothing stopping him. Once he gets something in his mind, his mindset, he's going to accomplish it, and he has been so far.
I understand that he also has an official title in Plymouth.
Yes, actually he has two now. He's the Junior Fire Chief of Plymouth Elm Hill Hose Company Number 3, and he's going to be the Grand Marshal in their Plymouth Alive Kielbasa Fest parade. So his engine and him and the team are going to help lead the parade.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's exciting. Had nothing to do with this. You didn't whisper
ear? Nope. Nope. He's been interested in fire, EMS, police, any sort of like community service. And he just wants to be a fireman. He wants to be a policeman. And he's just been doing this since he's a little kid, dressing up. Every year for Halloween, he's a cop or a fireman.
And it sounds like he's probably made a lot of friends in those departments as well.
You know, he really has. In school, it was hard. In the beginning, he'd have birthday parties and nobody would show up. And then he didn't even talk until he was about 4 years old. But it was the fire company that got him starting to talk. And he was asking questions about it and just wanted to know everything about it. He made so many friends and he considers his friends. And you know, with the fire company and all the firemen and police. So that's who he takes care of in his community.
How did he get introduced into the fire department?
We live close.
Ah.
It's a walking distance, and he always seen the engine out. So, you know, he was just asking, Mom, could we stop? So we did. We stopped. And ever since, you know, he's been inseparable and wanting to do things, you know, for the company and the community.
Now, how can people help?
He has his own public figure page on Facebook. It's Junior Fire Chief Brian Lyons. And there's a link on there where you could donate that way. Or there's a bank, First Keystone Bank in Plymouth. And there's an account set up right there for the Elm Hill Hose Equipment Fund. And you can donate that way.
And his lemonade stand has been all over the place.
He has multiple lemonade stands. He's doing the Kielbasa Fest. He'll be at the Sue Grizik Bandstand with Plymouth Alive. And they're located in the municipal parking lot. So he's going to have his little canopy set up there. He's going to sell his lemonade. 100% of his profit goes right to the fire company. So he doesn't keep any of it. He just gives it all.
I understand he has a hard-working group of people.
Yes, he really does. He has a whole support team behind him.
And even his secretary is here.
Even his secretary, Evelyn, comes to almost every event to help with the lemonade, the ice, whatever she can do.
And she makes some sandwiches.
And she's been fired a couple sandwiches. But yeah.
But she's how old is she?
Evelyn's seven.
She's seven.
Yeah,
so
she's seven.
She's doing a good job.
She really is.
So once again, give us the information, the Facebook page, where he's going to be, because we really hope that this is going to, I know it's going to succeed. We already know that, Brian.
Yeah, he's going to be at the Kibasi Festival in Plymouth. It's going to be located on Main Street. His stand's going to be set up probably around noon in the municipal parking lot next to Plymouth Alive. He's going to be right next to the bandstand for Sue Grzyk, the memorial. And he's going to be there probably both days. So he's going to do that event. And then after that, we've just learned he's going to do the Luzerne County Fair. So we're trying to get that all, everything set up for that. So that's going to be another event he'll do.
So you'll have to let us know.
That's in September sometime, yeah. But we don't know the details yet.
But check his Facebook page.
Definitely. It'll be updated.
Junior Fire Chief Brian Lyons is certainly leaving his mark. Not only is he trying to help raise money for the Jaws of Life for the fire company in Plymouth, but he's also started a discussion that's taken him all the way to Harrisburg about lemonade stands and kids. Right now, in the Commonwealth, you have to have a permit from the area you live in order to do a lemonade stand, even if it's in your own front yard. So the discussion is now opened, and the legislators will be talking more about that when they go back into session in the fall. Again, you can catch up with Brian this weekend. His lemonade stand will be at the Plymouth Kielbasa Festival, or you can make a donation to Keystone Community Bank, Main Street in Plymouth. It's under Elm Hill Hose Company No. 3 Equipment Fund. So from there, let's travel to the racetrack, Pocono Raceway. Plenty of things are still happening there, including another race and an upcoming air show. Intercom's Doc and Jesse caught up with the man who has all the information on those.
With us this morning, Ben May, who is the president of Pocono Raceway. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me. I love it.
We got a lot of stuff about to happen. You just built that playground in the infield, correct?
We did. 5,000 square foot playground in our infield, which is open every day. So anybody in the area who's looking for something to do with their kids, kill some time, come to the racetrack, go to our main gate, tell them you're there to go play on the playground.
I heard you even got stuff in there for kids with special needs if they can't be around loud noises and things like that.
We do, yeah. It's an inclusive playground, so that's the most important part for us, is that kids of all abilities can play side by side, so it's kind of a neat thing. Going to our doubleheader next year, June 26th through the 28th, we'll have both of our NASCAR weekends combined into one. The Truck Series in the morning on Saturday, followed by the Cup Series, and then we'll have the Xfinity Series Sunday morning, followed by the Cup Series. Wow. If you like camping, if you like hanging out at the racetrack, you like racing, this is a cool dream.
So you got other stuff going on. You got a big Indy race coming up, too. Tell us about that.
August 18th, the ABC Supply 500. Again, another one of those things, if you've never been to Pocono, IndyCar racing is cool. They're doing 230 miles an hour. It's like a little rocket ship going around the racetrack. Same family values there that we just talked about.
And then you guys are doing an air show this year.
It is our inaugural, the Great Pocono Raceway Air Show. So we have 12 acts. We have a group called Tora 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 that kind of does a reenactment type deal. But the cool thing about that is they're pyro. So they have a 2,000-foot wall of flames.
Wow.
So they're just going to blow up the infield. We're almost reimagining the air show experience, where if everybody's ever been, right, you stand on the tarmac, you look straight up, it's 95 degrees, and you're standing there on the asphalt. So we'll use our facilities as they were built. So you'll have a reserved seat in our grandstand, so almost a panoramic view. All the action will take place in the middle of the racetrack. Some planes are going to take off from the racetrack, land on the racetrack. We have permanent restroom. Again, the place is built for entertainment. Can't wait for practice day. So we have a practice day on Friday, August 23rd, and the show is the 24th and 25th. Same show both days. Tickets, $15. So again, real solid value.
Awesome.
something we take a lot of pride in.
And tickets on the website as well.
Tickets on the website. Right. So PoconoAirShow.com. You can also find it at PoconoRaceway.com.
Ben, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ben.
Appreciate it.
That tells you that there's still plenty of summer left. However, right around the corner, we're back to school. And physician's assistant Dawn Webster from MedExpress in Pittsburgh has some good suggestions that maybe you might want to start putting into action now. It's almost sad to say, Dawn, but we're getting ready for back to school time. And I know there are some that are already back in the classroom, but what should we do in order to prepare the kids for going back to school?
Sure. So one of the most important things to kind of think about, to talk about with your child would be their backpack. You know, we just kind of take it for granted. Everyone uses it. Everyone needs it. But a lot of times, you know, especially now, they're so heavy. They can really, you know, end up hurting a child's back.
That's scary, especially when you think that sometimes the kids don't have anything to say about the backpacks because they're coming home with assignments and they may have to carry this, that, and the other. So what would you suggest?
So one of the most important things to look for is just the straps. You know, make sure the straps are wide, they're padded. A lot of the backpacks now are, you know, almost more for decoration. You know, the kids pick it out because they like what's on it, or they like, you have to make sure it's functional too. So it should have nice wide padded straps. And then it, you know, it should feel durable. It shouldn't feel like the material's too light or flimsy. The other thing I would kind of consider if you need to is a rolling backpack.
That's a thought that maybe a lot of parents and caregivers wouldn't normally consider, but is that also maybe something that school districts are a little bit concerned about because, again, kids might be getting off and on buses, different things like that? Have you had any kind of feedback on those?
I guess that is a good point. I have not heard of parents saying that their kids weren't allowed to use the rolling backpack. But yeah, I mean, if you think about it, especially if there's a lot of stairs in school, it probably would make that hard. Now, the ones I've seen, they also have the straps to put on the back. So, you know, if you need to, you can also pick it up, put it on your back, but you have the option to roll it, you know, if it's significantly heavy. But yeah, I would definitely kind of make sure that the school's okay with that before just purchasing one.
But again, it's still one of those things that might be an option. And one of the other things that a lot of people talk about, too, is when they're going back to school, good nutrition. And I know that a lot of times it's very busy in the morning. So do you have any tips for anybody who's going out, maybe not even just for the kids, but for the parents as well? What would be something quick, easy? And I know, again, this is another one of those debatable topics. Do we eat breakfast? Do we not eat breakfast? So from a health perspective, what do you say?
Sure. So I do think breakfast is very important, especially for kids, honestly. I mean, before they take their testing, their state testing, they get informational sheets that ask them, and most schools will even provide them a free breakfast that day because they do. They want them to do their best. Studies do show that kids, you know, when they're hungry, they're not as focused. So one of the things I would recommend is eating a good breakfast. And, you know, and it's hard to do. You can't, you know, most parents don't have time to cook eggs and bacon and, you know, the typical breakfast foods in the morning before school. But they do have so many healthy options now. You can get, you know, breakfast bars that are actually good for you. They're not just sugar and you know, processed foods. They have oats and grains, and they're essentially like trail mix in a bar form. So yeah, there's a lot of healthy options now, but I would try to avoid, you know, the super high sugary cereals and you know, breakfast bars that really aren't breakfast bars. They're kind of like, you know, snack cakes almost. But I mean, honestly, anything's probably better than nothing, because you really do don't want, you know, you want them to be able to focus and pay attention. And when you're hungry, you can. It really is hard to focus when you're hungry and thinking about what you're going to be having for lunch.
Speaking of lunch, what say you? We have
schools that have lunch provided, and how many of us, raise your hand, went to school with our lunches packed. And I know, especially in the younger grades, there's so many allergies to be concerned about as well.
Yeah, there really are. So most schools now have probably an area for the kids to eat. They do want to bring, you know, the foods with the peanut butters or the tree nuts that, you know, other kids are allergic to. And the smaller schools, I think that, you know, they just kind of do it on an as-needed basis. So if there's no one in the class that has an allergy, they don't really worry about it for that year. But, you know, they do take that into consideration year by year. Now, the other thing is, you know, school lunches now, they are, you know, very healthy. There's healthy options. They're state mandated. I mean, they're looked at. They're scrutinized for what they're serving. And, you know, that's a great thing because, you know, when I was in school, that wasn't the case. I mean, my goodness, I think I had pizza every single day and I dipped it in ranch. And, you know, it definitely wasn't a healthy choice for it. But now that's not really the case. But when you're packing lunches, you can also pack healthy choices. I mean, and they even make it convenient for you now. I mean, they sell these little protein packs that are, you know, cubed up turkey and cheese and almonds. I mean, it doesn't get much healthier than that, to be honest. So there are lots of healthy options. You just have to look for them.
And one of the other big things when we think about the kids going back to school is a change in their sleep habits. All summer long, we've slept in. We haven't been worried about what time we go to bed, most of the time anyway. So how do we start getting back into those good sleep habits?
Oh, that's such a battle. That's such a battle. I mean, I'm going to be dealing with it myself in a couple of weeks. But yeah, I mean, really, you just have to, you know, up and down, set the expectations, you know, going back to school, this is going to be your bedtime. And, I mean, I remember when I was little, my mom used to make me practice going to bed early, you know, like the week before school, and it used to make me so angry, but, you know, you have to do it because it is so important. And they start that first week now. It's not like they get a free week where they go and just kind of play and, you know, hang out. I mean, day one, they are bringing home homework, so... You know, it really is important to kind of set that expectation and set those ground rules on what time bedtime is. And really, you know, they talk about the sleep environment now. And, you know, so 2 hours before bed, you know, no screen time, no TV, you know, better lighting. They have these amber light bulbs now that are supposed to, you know, promote relaxation. And they, you know, get rid of the blue light that kind of is stimulating like you get on screen. So... there's a lot to kind of look at now. I mean, we have way more options than we used to, but it's definitely a good idea to kind of get rid of the TVs and iPads and whatnot, you know, a couple hours before bed and kind of set that expectation of when they are going to be getting into bed and kind of starting to settle down.
Once again, thanks to Physician's Assistant Dawn Webster with MedExpress in Pittsburgh for some good suggestions in getting ready to go back to school. Don't go away. More Special Edition to come, and coming up, a big event coming to Wilkes-Barre celebrating the 250th anniversary. They're throwing a party, and we have the details. Welcome back to Special Edition. Mark the calendar, September 7th. It's going to be a big celebration. Tony Brooks and Patty Hughes are here, and they're going to tell us where and when and why. We have so many things that have been happening throughout the area, and of course, Wilkes-Barre, major hub for all kinds of things. You folks have something that's coming up. It's going to be a big September 7th. Who wants to give us, Tony, Patty, who wants to give us the rundown of part of the day?
Well, first of all, what I'd like to say is anniversaries give us a particular outstanding time to celebrate our culture. And we are going to celebrate 250 years of Wilkes-Barre, the first community in all of northeastern Pennsylvania, with two grand events. One, Free for the Family in Kirby Park with fireworks, and then a rooftop gala cocktail party on the top of the Citizens Bank building, which will overlook Kirby Park to see the fireworks as well.
Patty, let's have you start with the early part of the day with the folks at Kirby Park, where everybody can come and take part.
Right. So it's Saturday, September 7th. It's going to start at 11 o'clock in the morning, and it's going to be at Kirby Park. We're going to have food vendors, amusement rides, tethered hot air balloon rides, live music by Tom Petty Appreciation Band, and then at night there'll be a hot air balloon glow and then fireworks to follow. And it's open to the public and it's free. Starts at 11 a.m. and it'll probably go till 11 a.m. that night.
Wow, that's exciting. So you've got a whole day. And then, Tony, now the people who are at Kirby Park are still going to see the fireworks, but you're taking them to another opportunity for another venue to see them.
Yeah, that's correct. For a ticket event on the roof of the Citizens Bank building on South Franklin and Market Street, there will be a cocktail party for, well, we are told by the fire department could only handle 150 people.
Oh.
But the view is spectacular. And it will look right out over the Market Street Bridge and Kirby Park, where at the end of the cocktail party, we will see fireworks. But what I'm most excited about is John Wilkes and Isaac Berry will be there to greet you with a glass of champagne and take you up the elevator, where Rich Jenkins' jazz band will be playing wonderful music, and Jonathan's Restaurant, a fantastic new restaurant on North Franklin Street, will provide all the food for the event.
How is it possible that they're going to be here and they've been around for 250 years?
Well, they have been resurrected from the grave of London.
Wow.
We've flown them in on Virgin Airlines, and they will be here to celebrate the namesake of our city. You know, John Wilkes and Isaac Berry actually do not really have never been here. They're not the founders of Wilkes-Barre. Our actual founder of Wilkes-Barre are two gentlemen, Zebulon Butler and John Durkee. And
it was, so how come it's not called Butler Durkee
instead
right? of Wilkes-Barre?
We're kind of glad it is now. I always thought Durkeeville would be kind of an interesting name. But old folks will remember Fort Durkee Hotel on the public square. So there is that legacy that happens. But it was John Durkee who named it after John Wilkes and Isaac Berry. They were two British members of Parliament who both said when our revolution was starting, remember that phrase, no taxation without representation?
Absolutely.
Well, John Wilkes and Isaac Berry got up in the middle of the House of Commons and would say, yes, they are right. We agree with them.
Oh.
Utterly amazing and very revolutionary for them to do that in the presence of King George III at the time.
So all of this has then comes right over the ocean and lands here in Wilkes-Barre.
Absolutely, lands right here in Wilkes-Barre. I mean, the original settlers of Wilkes-Barre were very revolutionary. 90% of the Wyoming Valley supported the revolution at the time. But if you go to New York or Boston or Philadelphia, you have about a third of this population still supporting the king. So we're a very revolutionary place.
Wow.
From the Revolutionary War right through the Industrial Revolution with anthracite coal, Wilkes-Barre is revolutionary.
So that's why we're having this 250th anniversary. Now, what is it the anniversary of? Is it the anniversary of the birth date or?
Mm-hmm. So the anniversary is 1769, and it's the anniversary of the first settlement, permanent settlement of settlers from Connecticut.
Oh.
So Wilkes-Barre has various anniversary dates. So that's the founding and the settlement. 1806 is when we became a borough. 1871 is when we became a city. So this is the founding of the first permanent settlement.
And it was September 7th?
No. It was all throughout that year.
Patty's shaking her head.
So in February of 1769, 40 settlers came. And that's where you get the term 40 Fort for the borough of 40 Fort. The following month, another 200 settlers came. So in 1769, 240 settlers came to not only Wilkes-Barre, but Wilkes-Barre Township, Kingston Township, Hanover Township, Pittston Township, and Plymouth Township.
Amazing. And Patty, you just happen to be involved with the city of Wilkes-Barre, where you plan all of these wonderful events. So it was nice of them to decide that they were going to do this so that 250 years later, Patty Hughes could come along and say, let's have a party. How did this come about?
Nothing like a party by Patty. Well, we teamed up with the Wilkes-Barre Preservation Society, the Times Leader, Diamond City Partnership, and Greater Wilkes-Barre Chamber. along with Wilkes-Barre City Hall, and we knew that we had to come up with something big to celebrate this momentous event. So we wanted to do it in two different ways, one for a free one and then one for a paying one for the everyone to celebrate.
Now, the one that's going to be the paid one at night, what are we talking as far as, I know it's got to be over 21, as Tony said, but what would be the cost and, you know, a little bit about who came up with all that idea?
So that's going to be on the rooftop of the Citizens Bank building. It's going to be heavy hors d'oeuvres by Jonathan's, cocktails with a commemorative wine glass, music by Rich Jenkins, a special performance by Madison Domkoski, and then a spectacular rooftop view of the fireworks. Also, as Tony mentioned, greeted by John Wilkes and Isaac Berry. And it's really a spectacular view up there. I've been up there three times. It's going to be really nice, just like the big cities do it. Tickets are on Eventbrite, and they are $125 per person. Celebrate the 250th anniversary of Wilkes-Barre's founding.
And how long is that going to go? What time will people be able to start arriving there?
So that's a 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. till the fireworks are finished.
What about sponsors?
Right, so I'd like to thank our sponsors, Community Bank, D&M Furniture, Comets Law, Penn Eastern Engineering, Hoban Insurance, and last but not least, Hoddle's Restaurant, one of the oldest restaurants in Wilkes-Barre, and they are graciously paying for the fireworks. Yeah, so that's a huge, huge help for this. And we're still looking for more sponsors.
And how do people get in touch with you if they would like to be a sponsor?
Right, so they could contact me at phughes@wilkes-barre.pa.us, or they can call Wilkes-Barre City Hall. Phone number is 570-208-4149. That's my direct line.
And all they have to do is say, give me Party Patty, and we'll be
your money.
Tony, we're talking about all of these different things happening, and part of it's happening at Kirby Park. Was that before or after the founding of Wilkes-Barre, or was how did Kirby Park end up in all of this?
So Kirby Park comes a lot later, until the 1920s. In 1924 is when Kirby Park was named in honor of F.M. Kirby, who donated the land for the park to the city.
Oh.
And a lot of people might know who Kirby is because F.M. Kirby Center for the Performing Arts was partially donated by or the money raised by F.M. Kirby's grandson and Al Boscov back in the 1980s. And of course, the Kirby name is all over Wilkes-Barre. You got the Kirby Health Center, Kirby Park. There's the Kirby Library Mountaintop, the Kirby Hall at Wyoming Seminary, Kirby Hall also at Lafayette. There's a lot of philanthropy that the Kirby's done over the years.
We have all of this history that's taking part. And when we look back over the 250 years, especially at Kirby Park, are you going to have anything kind of to relate to that since the Preservation Society is going to be involved?
Yes, well, actually, we'll have the 24th Connecticut Regiment will be there in their costumes with their wares, and will be demonstrating what it was like to be in the military during the Revolutionary War at that period. And people might be jarred a little bit because I said Connecticut. We originally were Connecticut. All of northeastern Pennsylvania was at one time called Westmoreland County, Connecticut.
Westmoreland Club.
Correct, because we were more land west of Connecticut. So those 240 settlers that came in 1769 come from Connecticut. And when the Revolutionary War started, the local regiment that was raised in support of the Continental Congress and George Washington was called the 24th Connecticut. That regiment still exists today. It's called the 109th Field Artillery on Market Street in Kingston. And they are the only National Guard unit in all of the country authorized to carry two state flags. So if you go, for example, to the July 4th celebrations at the Wyoming Monument, you will see the color guard of the 109th posting the flag of Connecticut and posting the flag of Pennsylvania.
Patty, you're amazing. How did you go about getting all of these people to come to your party? This is just incredible.
Well, I'm real good at telling people what to do.
When it comes to different things like this, I think it's probably important, especially when you're looking at the family outing at Kirby Park, to be able to give the area, because my head's just spinning right now.
Sure.
Where we've gone from Westmoreland and how we are west of Moreland. And
well, just, we knew we wanted to make it bigger than the 4th of July celebration because we are older than the country, being one of the 13 colonies. So we knew we had to do something bigger.
I didn't realize all this could come from something like this. Well, let's not miss it. Patty, give us the day rundown again, Kirby Park, the when, the where.
Sure. So it's Saturday, September 7th, 250th celebration of Wilkes-Barre's Founder Day at Kirby Park, starting at 11 a.m. in the morning with food vendors, which we're still taking on vendors of all kinds, amusement rides, hot air balloon tethered rides, live music by Tom Petty Appreciation Band, and then to end it with fireworks at dusk. That is an all-day event. And the rooftop gala at the Citizens Bank at 8 West Market Street will start at 7 p.m. And that is $125 per person. It is limited to 150 attendees. And tickets are on Eventbrite. And you can contact me via email at phughes@wilkes-barre.pa.us. Any questions.
And of course, the Wilkes-Barre City Facebook page has all the information.
Sure.
And Tony, I'm going to give you the last word. You've given us so much information now about things that I think a lot of our listeners didn't realize. If someone would like to find out more, get in touch with you, what do they do?
So if you want to learn more about Wilkes-Barre history, my day job is the director and curator of the Wilkes-Barre Preservation Society and the Zebulon Butler House Museum. We offer tours every year of the fantastic history and architecture of downtown Wilkes-Barre. I don't know if people realize this, but there are 250 buildings on the National Register for the River Street Historic District. And I'm very proud that all along Franklin Street and River Street, we've been able to preserve this fantastic architecture from our Connecticut Yankee history all the way to the president. So if people really want to learn more history, you can follow me on the Wilkes-Barre Preservation Society's Facebook page, where I post architectural history and social history all the time. And if you want to come on a tour of downtown Wilkes-Barre, it will be Saturday, September 21st at 11 a.m. meeting at St. Stephen's Episcopal Church, which is the back of Boscov's on South Franklin Street.
Charge for that?
$10.
$10. And then if anyone would like to find out more, you have the Butler House?
Yeah, the Butler House is on South River Street. It's a new project that we took on 2 years ago. We purchased the oldest house in Wilkes-Barre, built in 1793, encapsulating a 1773 log cabin of Zebulon Butler, who was the leader of the American forces at the Battle of Wyoming, and pretty much, with him and John Durkee, the founders of Wilkes-Barre. And that house is slowly being turned into a museum that will interpret four generations of the Butler family that lived there from the Revolutionary War to the Civil War.
You both come back and tell us about some more things?
Anytime.
Absolutely.
And the next time somebody says to me, Wilkes-Barre, boy, I know who to send them to.
That's right. You give them to us.
Mark the calendar September 7th and check out the Facebook page of both Wilkes-Barre City and the Wilkes-Barre City Preservation Society for more information. Now, don't go away. More Special Edition yet to come. Special Edition continues. Now we meet Eileen Perchak and Peggy Duracco. They're with SAFE, which is...
SAFE stands for Supporting Autism and Families Everywhere. We were founded in 1995 to help families affected with autism. We're a 501 nonprofit. Basically, what our mission is to do is to support and empower families. I have a son who is now 23 years old, and when he first got diagnosed in Northeast PA, there wasn't a whole lot of services for autism.
And that's just 23 years.
Correct.
Yeah.
We've come leaps and bounds. Northeast PA is probably one of the best places in the area for autism services. So when my son was first diagnosed, first and foremost, it's very isolating. It's very scary. When somebody says something to you that there's something wrong with your child, you immediately go into, you know, your flight or fight response.
And how old was he when he was diagnosed?
He was about 3 and a half. So I was driving to Hershey 3 days a week to get services for him. And, you know, the services progressed, and we got some in Northeast PA. And he had good services here. He had therapeutic staff support, which now they call BTs. And He was getting speech therapy, occupational therapy, did neurobiofeedback therapy. But the one thing that was missing was a friend. He had no friends. He was very socially ostracized because he was quirky. He's on the high end of the spectrum, so he's a bright boy. But again, he was kind of quirky.
Let's go back 23 years. And that meant he had to go to school.
He did. He was completely mainstreamed. As I said, he's articulate. He's very bright, but the social cues, he didn't get any of that.
And he was still a rarity.
He was. And I hate to use the term guinea pig, but in my district, he was kind of the guinea pig kid that they didn't know what to do with because he was high functioning. So he was bullied terribly. And that, for me, was just awful as a parent. Mm-hmm. So I went looking for a friend for him. And that's how I became involved with SAFE. And that was, 16 years ago at this point. And I also met other parents that were going through the same things I was.
And where were they from?
They were from all over. They're from Lackawanna County, Luzerne County, Columbia County, Schuylkill County. They were from everywhere. And they too, were doing the same thing. For something for their child to do that made them, and I hate to use this term, child feel normal, let them be a kid where they never could. A lot of these children work so hard. They're in therapies all day long. They're with therapists, occupational speech. You know, they're very regimented schedules. So to give them some free time is huge. So that's how I met my friends at SAFE. And we started, and now my son is part of the adult Asperger group. He has continued all these years through. They just went to Knoebels 2 weekends ago. You know, they go bowling. They do video game live. They've been to the Kirby Center. So he's maintained these friendships, which is huge for somebody on the spectrum.
And when we're talking about that, again, autism has now fast forwarding 23 years, has now become such a mainstream word.
It really has.
Can you give our listeners a little bit of an insight into what exactly that, from your perspective? I mean, I know you're not a medical, but let me tell you something. I know from my own experience that when you have to deal with something like this, you become very well versed.
You do quickly. You get an education you never thought you would have.
So what exactly does autism mean?
Well, it's a neurological disorder. In my world, it was earth-shattering. It was earth-shattering for me because you go into it thinking, I'm going to have this beautiful baby and everything's going to be fine.
But so, it's not outward, so you wouldn't even know that to look at him when he's three.
No, and I was older when I had my children, so I had nothing to gauge it on. Now, in hindsight, I see he was very repetitive. Like, I'd be like, look at him. He's watching the same movie over and over again. He's a good baby.
Yeah, but kids do that all the time.
But then now I would see he would, he had a little bit of OCD. He would line his trucks up. things had to be a certain way. Tags drove him crazy. He had tactile issues. I know all that now. I didn't then. I don't really have an opinion on why the rate of autism is going up because it's such a controversial issue. My thought was always, I don't care why. I'm going to do what I need to do to make my son function as best as he possibly can and be as independent as he can. And I think that's pretty much the goal of any parent, whether they're high-functioning, nonverbal, verbal. Most parents I know, that is their ultimate goal, is to get that child to live a happy, independent life.
We're talking with the ladies from SAFE. Let's bring Peggy in here for a second. Peggy, you're involved with most of it, getting the word out. Eileen has been telling us about her son and her experience. Do you have a background in this as well?
I am not a parent of an autistic child, but my sister is. My nephew is 24 now. Unbelievable. But anyway.
But again, we have that span of time.
Yeah, and he's in New Jersey. He lives in New Jersey now. He always has. And things are a little different in Jersey and Pennsylvania, but similar. My sister was in a rural area of New Jersey, and she faced a lot of the same issues that Eileen did. At that time, with services, with friends, with stuff to do and programs to provide for him. So in order to help her, I stumbled upon SAFE here, and I attended, when he was very young, I attended several meetings here for SAFE. And then kind of life, you know, I had my own daughter and I was involved with her stuff. So I was kind of in a distance involved. And then probably about 3 or 4 years ago, I came back working with Eileen and the SAFE staff and started to do some photography for them and started to look at their social media and their website and try to help out in that way. And here we are today.
Yeah. And now you're involved in so many different aspects of all of these things. Now, since you are involved in all of this, are you seeing for any chance, again, we're talking about this time span of children who were born 23, 24 years ago and now up to today, social media must play a very big part of people getting together.
And you can find people. I mean, it was very difficult back in the beginning stages for my sister to find people who also had autistic children or who were similar to her in what they were looking for their children or just who had autistic children at all because she was in a more rural area. But I think that is true. I think social media is huge. That's how the main way people communicate anymore, including us at the office. People email us, text us, whatever, and that's how they get in touch with us now, which, of course, 23 years ago was non-existent. So
exactly.
That's huge. And we're also able to get the word out. And huge for us is collaborating with other people, and that's all because of social media as well. We have nice collaborations with the Kirby, with Geisinger, with a lot of the local behavior therapists, a lot of the local organizations with autism. We collaborate with. We share their stuff. They share ours. And that's been huge for our families because now if it's not our event, they can see somebody else is having an event and they'll think, oh, the Kirby's putting on a sensory-friendly show. That's awesome. We'll go to that.
So. Yes. We've seen a lot, again, in the span of time. So, Eileen, give us a little bit of a background now as to what your SAFE group does with these families because, again, it's not therapy. It's fun.
It is. We get to do the fun stuff. We try to do social outings. We took 62 people yesterday to Montage, and they had the park from 9 to 11 privately. Montage has been great about giving us a really discounted rate for that because a lot of our families, A, can't afford to bring a family of 6 or 8 to a water park for the day, or they have the problem, they get there, and the kid has a meltdown, and everybody's got to leave. So we try to create environments that are inclusive in the community, but are safe environments that if a child does have a meltdown or, you know, is having an issue, that it's okay and they're not looked at and they're not frowned upon.
Mm-hmm.
We try to go, as I said, we have swim programs, we have music programs, we have art programs. We recently just moved into our new office. We're now located on 1325 North River Street in Plains because we were tornadoed out last year.
Yes, you were.
Which was very, very difficult. Our office over there was a gift in kind to us from the Tambor family. So we've increased our overhead tremendously by moving. So we take donations. But our programs are awesome. Just look on our Facebook page. As Peggy said, our social media, our website, social media. We update our programs probably weekly. We go bowling. We go camping. We're offering private swim lessons at Camp Orchard Hill, the Valley Country Club in the Hazelton area. So we have a lot going on. We want our families to come out to meet each other. And again, just to have fun and let kids be kids. We have programs from, it's called My Special Person and Me from 0 to 7. We have Pals and Teens. And then we have the Adult Asperger Group too.
Peggy, when we're talking about all of these different activities, do you look for people to donate, as Eileen mentioned, Montage, the Montage Water Park? So what if there is someone listening who's thinking, well, I'm in an area and I've never been approached by the folks from SAFE. Would that be something that you would welcome?
Definitely. We're always looking for new members. We, as Montage, as an example, while we were there, families who didn't know about us came through just to go to Montage themselves. And it gave us an opportunity then to talk to them and give them our information about becoming a member. It seemed like there's a lot of families who maybe the kids are here for the summer, and we would welcome them as well to come do the activities, join our group. We have a $35 a year membership fee. But that covers not only the child on the spectrum, but the whole family at all of our events. You know, I'm going to say 99% of our events are at no cost to the families, because a lot of our families can't afford to do these activities unless, you know, we're there to help them.
That's wonderful. Yeah. So yes, let's say again, there's somebody who maybe has a fleet of vehicles or a bus line or something, and they're hearing this and they're thinking, well, maybe Peggy and Eileen would like to take their kids to the Poconos or something.
That would be awesome. And we do have families that say, oh my gosh, I'd love to go here or there, but I have no way to get there. And right now, kind of our solution for that is you have to, if you can get to one meeting, you can make friends. And once you start making friends, then of course, through making friends, maybe you can get a ride or you can find a way there. If we had a way to get people there, that would really expand, I think, our population, so our family population. So that would be awesome. We would, anything. We love to collaborate. We're all about promoting you. You help us, we'll promote you. We're setting up our website. We've revamped it, but we are going to have a referral page for different groups and different companies that would like to be on a referral page that can provide assistance to our families as well.
I'm fascinated by the fact that just 20 years ago, so many people were without and had no idea where to turn, and now folks like you are available. There's so many others that are available.
Well, I always say to my sister and Eileen that these guys were really the pioneers. So they were, you know, unfortunately maybe for them, but the kids today really truly benefit from kids like Eileen's Michael and my nephew Jack, because they've gone through the war already, and you don't have to reinvent the wheel at this point for them, right?
Mm-hmm. So Eileen, come on back in here now.
And I kind of want to piggyback on something
sure.
that Peggy said. If you call our office, which is 570-822-7259, and you're looking for services, we have tons of resources that we can give them phone numbers for. You know, there's different therapies all over Northeast PA, whether it's behavior, cognitive. We have a list that we can give them. We don't say specifically use X, Y, and Z, but we have the resources to help them find where they need to go.
So not only are you fun, but you're helpful.
Well, we try to be. We also partner with Geisinger ADMI, their autism research group, and they've been fantastic for us. They fund a lot of our programs, and they are doing the genetic component of it. So the families can do a genetic testing through Geisinger, and it's at no cost to them.
Wow.
So that's huge, because genetic testing is cost prohibitive if you don't have the means for it. Please call the office. We have the resources to help the people, and not just the fun stuff. You know, we are there to help them get the help they need.
Can you imagine what your life would have been like had it been now instead of 23 years ago, and you came to meet you? Wouldn't that have been?
Well, that's a loaded question. But
wouldn't that have been something?
Exactly. It would have. But again, Northeast PA is probably one of the best places in the country for autism services. And I know people who've moved here for the services. It really is a good area for the autism services.
So once again, give us the information. How do people get in touch with SAFE?
They can call us at 570-822-7259, or our website, www.autismsafe.org, or email at autismsafe.org.
Plus, we got Facebook, we've got Twitter, we've got Instagram, we've got
all of it.
Everything that's coming down the pike, these ladies will be there.
Thanks for listening to Special Edition, a weekly look at the issues in the news and the personalities shaping the stories, a production of Intercom Communications.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.